What's up, guys? It's a new Off the Record podcast today here at CycloneFanatic.com. I'll be talking with my good friend, my good neighbor, my podcast partner in crime, that is, Brent Bloom, coming up here momentarily as we record this on a Friday night at the home office in beautiful Bondurant. But hey, shout out to my people at the Iowa Clinic. Today, I am here to promote the Iowa Clinic Men's Center as well as their urgent care. Now, this is God honest truth about the Iowa Clinic urgent care. Do you guys remember back in February when I contracted scarlet fever? Do you remember that? It was awful. My daughter, she'd been going to the daycare, and I got scarlet fever. And the folks at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, well, they were great, but they sent me over to the urgent care, and they hooked me up to IVs. I had 103 temp for five straight days. They hooked me up to the IVs. Those people over there at urgent care in Ankeny, man, I owe a lot to them. I'll tell you what, Doc Nicholson, my man at the Men's Center, I got my physical coming up here in a couple of weeks. Big annual physical. Check them out. The Iowa Clinic Men's Center, urgent care, banner ads all over the place at CycloneFanatic.com. Having said that, hey, it's Brent Bloom. Welcome.
I like how, who have you had on this so far? It was Prome, Campbell, Pollard.
Bloom.
Yeah. It's what one of these is
now,
not like the other?
With all due respect to those three gentlemen.
Sure.
You know more about Iowa State athletics than the combination of them combined. Like the history of Iowa State.
Well, I know who Lee Love is. I bet Jamie Parr doesn't know who Lee Love is.
I don't know who that is.
Or Paris Corner.
Oh, you got to explain who these people are.
There's
now.
Seven people are going, yeah, I remember those guys. They were on the Tim Floyd team that wasn't very good, essentially.
See, that's the problem with me, and I've been very open about this. My Iowa State knowledge. Now, I do believe this, and perhaps this is arrogant of me, but I feel like the Wayne Morgan years on, I could go toe-to-toe with you.
Well, you can. We've had that discussion.
But anything prior to that, I'm garbage. Most of the people listening know more about me.
With that, too. But it's weird, though, because we're 12 years post-Wayno.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting old.
We are getting old.
There's young guys right now listening to this go,
Wayne, who?
Who is Jared Holman? They probably heard about him, just like we heard about Barry Stevens. But it's just interesting how the older you get, the more perspective you have in a weird way.
I get to feel old when I, earlier today I sat down with Stansberry and Kroger. I took the boys out to lunch. That made me feel old.
That was like Keith Murphy did with you.
Yeah, it is. It is like Murph did with me.
Gotta have a mentor in life.
Yeah, well.
That's true. I don't know why they picked
Murph was a much better one than I am. We all know that. You had the Godfather.
I had Walter, absolutely.
So the point of today's podcast. Again, just to be clear, we are recording this on Friday night. We are hopeful that no news breaks over the weekend. If you're listening to this on Saturday or Sunday, that means some news is broken and we're trying to get this out so it's not dated. The plan here is to post early next week. So hopefully you're listening to this on a Monday or Tuesday because we want to, this is the first of a two-part Off the Record podcast brought to you by the Iowa Clinic, where Bloom and I will kind of preview the upcoming Iowa State football season. And I'm torn on this year. I'm excited, Bloom, because I really like Matt Campbell.
Totally.
I think part of what makes Matt Campbell exciting is his staff. Not that these guys have great, oh my gosh, these resumes are amazing, but I do think that they're a well-oiled machine the way that this group of gentlemen work together, which that excites me. I am also a little bit scared just because I feel like we've been here before. We've seen this. Everybody gets excited about a new coach. Didn't Chizik lose that opening game?
Yeah.
Okay, and I don't think Campbell's going to do that. I think that he has a better team than Chizik did that year. However, if, let's say, just hypothetically, Iowa State goes into Iowa City and loses by three touchdowns, I am scared that
that there will be folks jump off the bandwagon quickly. And the reason that frightens me is because I really like what these guys – I think these are the guys. I really do. When I say that, do I think that these guys will lead Iowa State to a Big 12 title? I don't know. That's really hard to do, let's be honest. However, I think if anybody can win here, I think it's Matt Campbell. I know I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, man. I get it. But, like, I've been around these guys enough where they've got me super excited. But with that, I'm also cautiously optimistic because I know how quickly fans can be to turn on a guy, you know, if things don't go well in the first 3-4 weeks.
No doubt. Yeah, Chizik lost to
Kent State.
Who was the quarterback of Kent State?
That he's in the NFL.
Yeah. See if we can get the at home. You're guessing right now.
No, number 16.
I don't remember his number was in college, but he's now a New England Patriot.
Garoppolo?
Nope. Julian Edelman.
Edelman, yeah.
The receiver now.
Yeah.
He was their quarterback.
Garoppolo,
we just
what a
ran terrible. All over the place.
Yeah, I knew it was somebody.
But then he lost you and I too.
But let's be honest though. Like, you or I could have run all over that defense.
Right, and so this is where I want to go. We were around for that spring and that fall of the Chizik era.
Yeah.
Similar excitement level, I'd say, to this.
Yeah, that's...
But when you watched it up close, you kind of got an idea that I don't know if this guy really knows what he's doing.
Well, what...
Because he had his best buddies, which this staff, they're all buddies.
Yeah.
It just... I think... You know, that defensive coordinator, John Heacock's a little bit different than Wayne Bolt. And I like Manning's credentials maybe a little bit more than Robert McFarland, who'd come from Stephen F. Austin.
Bob McFarland didn't do a bad job.
He didn't do a bad job.
He didn't do a bad job. Let's not throw Bob McFarland under the bus, all right? Come on.
I'll throw Wayne Bolt under the bus today and tomorrow.
Is Wayne Bolt the worst coordinator of the modern-day Iowa football era?
Marty Fine, but he wasn't a coordinator. I'd throw him in the mix.
No, he was the old line coach. Like he doesn't. I'm saying coordinator. I think, and I really like him, but I think Courtney Messingham would be in the discussion. And the only other guy you could throw into the mix, like
Sklidizzle had some moments.
Sklidizzle, could you put Barney Cotton into the conversation? I mean, just because I feel like the play calling
they underachieved.
The play calling in 2005 down the stretch, was a fireable offense one after another. However, he also did some good things. They had some decent offense during those days too.
Yeah, I'm putting Wayne Bolt in his own category.
Yeah, he's got to be the
nice man.
Even Messingham there are certain statistics, and a lot of fans won't want to hear this. There are certain statistical categories where you look at the Messingham offense compared to the Herman offense, and you go, well, they got better in that category. However, there was a lot of incompetence too.
I'd agree with that. I still think that was Paul's biggest downfall. 11-12 was Messingham over somebody on the outside.
Well, and if you look at it now with hindsight, where Tom Herman is and where his replacement is.
Correct. I don't know if they could have kept Herman.
No, they couldn't have kept Herman.
Needed somebody else with a little more innovative ideas. And Messingham tried to do the same thing Tom did, but it just didn't. It didn't quite resonate. Anyway.
Before we get into the preview, though, can I make a quick point? And I was thinking about this earlier today. Because I think it's going to make or break Steve Prohm, too. I can make an argument, I think, that assistant coaching staffs are more important in Ames than they are just about anywhere else in the country. And a couple of bad hires can just because the margin for error at Iowa State is so much more slim than a lot of other places.
I understand.
Especially when you're in you're the northern tip of the Big 12. If you make one or two bad assistant coaching hires, it can doom you. And I think what we've talked about here, if Paul Rhodes finds another Tom Herman, he's probably still sitting.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt.
If
2012 is totally different.
No question.
They win 9 games.
Yeah, they're 8 or 9 wins. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that. And I'll also say this. I think, and I've wondered this many times, had Fred Hoiberg made a couple of different decisions with his assistant coaching staff?
His first staff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Iowa State probably is in a Final Four at some point in time.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So better.
Oh, I think better.
I also think if he doesn't keep TJ and doesn't hire Bobby Lutz the first time.
Oh, it could have gone off the rails.
Yeah, it could have gone way
horribly. No, that first staff, I would argue, was Fred's best staff by far.
I think so. Yeah. Well, because he hired... There were some interesting hires within there. Who's the JUCO guy that didn't last like a year?
Elwin McCroy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
The thing was, like, I think Fred's staff, he had always had good guys, like quality guys, but they have a lot of the same characteristics at the same time. Like, Charlie Henry is a genius basketball guy, but he didn't really ever recruit. And then you had, like, Abdul Massey, and all he did was recruit. And he, you know what I mean? I think you make a couple of different moves. I'm not even necessarily those two. I mean, I still don't know. Like, Cornell Mann, like, Fred kept calling him the defensive coordinator. Well, what is he, Wayne Bolt? Because he didn't play a lot of defense, Fred.
No, true. But I think the fair question is, similarly to Fred's staff, is Neil Barry was kind of a Charlie Henry deal.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know yet. Neil's a super guy.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go, like, I don't think Charlie Henry is a bad hire because he...
No, he was the X's and O's guys for Fred. And I don't know if that was understood by the general Iowa State fan. Fred was got a lot of credit for a lot of the, you know, scheming and things, but it was Charlie was the one drawing up a lot of those plays.
Correct.
Inbound stuff out.
Which is why he took him to the Chicago Bulls.
Right.
If he sucked, he wouldn't have done that.
No, assistant coaches are huge, absolutely huge. And I think it's a fair question to ask about Tom Manning. And there's going to be big growing pains with him. Luckily, Matt Campbell is an offensive guy, and he'll help him in that transition. The hire we might look back at 2 years from now and go, I'm glad that they got him to come, was the defensive coordinator, John Heacock, because they had to battle to get that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, they had advertising on the south end zone, and they really were fighting several fronts to get him to move out of Ohio to come to Ames. And he's the veteran presence on that staff. Older guy, is a head coach at Youngstown State, and clearly is the wise soul in that staff. And I believe, from what I'm hearing, that he'll be a big key part of that defense growing. I think Wally Burnham was a quality coach. I loved Wally.
Oh, yeah, I do too. No question.
But there's one thing that...
I think Paul Rhodes was a quality coach.
Yeah, I think there's one thing that Wally did really well his first 4 years, and then it disappeared the last couple, and that's turnovers. They just didn't force as many turnovers. Is that a luck thing? Probably. But that's what made Wally's defense so good in the first 3 years, and why it was so horrible, really, the last 3 years after that.
Which was interesting, too. I don't know if you've been following the countdown to kickoff that the boys have been doing.
I have. They've done a nice job with
that. One of the guys, I think it was Jared's piece the other day, was on sacks, about how Iowa State doubled its input on sacks last
15
year.
To 30.
When you would think that that would result in more turnovers, but it didn't.
It didn't. If you look at the numbers, and I think this is encouraging for this year. Iowa State gave up 453 yards last year on defense. That's not great. It's also 80 yards better than 2014. So they got 80 yards better last year. The offense had 410 yards of total offense. That was the best total offense for Iowa State since Sage and J.J. Moses were running around in 2000. So that difference was only, 40 yards between the two. In 2014, the difference between defense and offense was close to 140. So I think they're trending the right way, and a lot of those guys are back. So Wally did an okay job last year, but the turnover is the biggest thing. They finished 114th in the nation in turnover margin. They were minus 11. They turned it over too much. They also didn't get many. And Iowa State hasn't had plus turnover margin since 2010.
Nice. Good stat.
That's a lot of times it's a luck deal, and it turns over, but there's a reason the last 3 years why Iowa State hadn't been as good as they were 11 and 12 on defense. The players weren't as good, but they haven't been having the opportunistic defense that Wally Burnham made a name for himself the first 3 years.
And I would also add, too, how many dropped interceptions has Iowa State had?
Well, and
it's about execution, too.
And think about just the game against Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
The magical one. They gave up the most yards passing in Jack Trice history to Brandon Whedon, which is forgotten about. I mean, they gave up almost 500 yards of
passing. Yeah, look around my man cave right now. It's all Oklahoma State.
But they only gave up...
Yeah, that's crazy.
They only gave up 24 points in regulation because they turned them over five times.
Yeah.
And then in overtime was the tip by Jake Knott, and Taron Benton gets the interception.
Yeah.
Stuff like that erases yardage, and they just didn't do that enough the last 3 years. So turnovers, it's so easy to say, but it's so hard to do. Turnovers are absolutely important, and they need to They need to get better. And that was already the focus on day one of fall camp, but somehow getting more turnovers and also taking care of themselves. It just has to happen. If the biggest correlation for success is positive turnover margin of any stat in football. That's it. And they haven't had a positive turnover margin since 2010.
Sense a theme for your hype column this year.
Well, it's so obvious. It's like, duh. You got to be good with turnovers. But it's so true. And the sacks.
Got to be good on first down and turnovers.
First down, you got to run the ball, first down, turnovers. There you go. You'll be good at football that way. You also got to stop the run.
It's part one of our two-part. Part two will be in a few weeks, like as we really get close to the season.
We'll know a little bit more then.
Yeah. So this is kind of like, even though it's already started, this is kind of Mayan Bloom's fall camp preview. Do you want to start on the offense or the defense? We can kind of just go unit by unit here. Where you pick a unit, Bloom.
Well, that's just, everyone likes offense more than defense, to be honest.
Okay. Do you want to start with positive or negative?
I'm a positive guy.
I'll give you a positive. Do you want a positive?
Yeah.
Mike Warren's a positive.
He is.
I can quickly go negative on Mike Warren, too, and it's not specific to Mike Warren. It's just what's behind him.
Okay. As far as backup running backs?
Okay, yeah. Well, let me put it this way.
I agree.
Warren's fantastic. Is Warren the best, like, most promising running back since Troy Davis at Iowa State?
So that's a great question. What gets underappreciated with Mike...
What, he didn't play the first two games?
Well, he ran for 1,400 yards. It was 1,340 is what it was. His average per carry, was 5.9 yards per carry, which is a massive number.
Yeah.
Troy Davis in his career was like 5.2.
Wow.
So.
Great stat.
Mike Warren, his year was way better than I think we're even giving him credit for. The question is, was that him? That offensive line was pretty good last year, run blocking. And I'll target two guys for sure.
Jamison Locke,
number one.
Fantastic.
His year last year was phenomenal. And I don't know how they're going to replace him. But here's a guy, Locke, was a tight end at Council Bluffs. I think he went to, I want to say.
He was Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln, yeah. He was a Lynx.
Yeah. Because it wasn't TJ and it wasn't Lewis Central. It had to be Abe Lincoln.
Yep, it was Abe Lincoln. Yeah. And then they grew him into he was a tackle. Then they moved him inside to center. Yep. But he made himself into a honorable mention all Big 12 guy. And he started every game last year. Daniel Burton got dinged quite a bit, but I think he was a really good run blocking guard. You don't have either of those guys now. But other than that, they stayed relatively healthy up front. Brock Daigle had some issues at tackle. And then, you know, Burton was hurt. But Locke was there for every game. Campos was there for pretty much every game. Philpert was healthy. They're five now. If they stay healthy, I think they can be okay. The center's not going to be as good as Locke, but hopefully you get improvement in those other places.
That whole if they stay healthy thing.
And this is where I want to go. They hadn't stayed healthy for like 3 years in a row until last year. And they were reasonably healthy last year. And I think that's why Mike Warren had some good yardage, and he did a lot of that himself.
Brent, a walk-on defensive tackle is their backup left tackle. Breon Creer.
But he's not going to stay there. They're going to get a JUCO in there.
I know, but...
You can't... If Breon Creer is the starting left tackle, come you and I, then we'll chat. One of those JUCOs better beat him out.
I'm just saying...
I understand.
Do you understand why I tremble when I look at this offensive line?
The first five are okay.
This Brian Bobick will start.
That's a huge get.
He's a stud.
And out of nowhere.
If he's, yeah, he'll.
He beats out Good Jones, and then Good Jones can move to another position.
Good Jones will be like the backup center, and he'll move around at guard.
He could play all. I think he could play. He's a really sharp kid, smart kid.
Yeah, he's really good.
They can move him around.
He reminds me of a much bigger Tom Farniok as a freshman.
Yeah, because Tom is 270. This kid's 295.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but like Tom like had the mental capacity to just throw him in there
as
a redshirt freshman. This kid, I think, can do that as well.
Yeah, Bobak, if people listening don't know his story, he is an Illinois native, commits to Ohio State, plays as a true freshman at Ohio State. Has a heart condition So goes to Minnesota. While at Minnesota, I think injures a knee and played, I think he started 4 or 6 games last year before had injury issues, but had a grad transfer year, wanted to go somewhere where he could start. And so they picked him up about 2 months ago, and they say he's the strongest guy in the program right now.
Yeah.
And the heart issues are behind him. It was like a, I don't know, technical name. I'm not a doctor, but you can Google it.
You work with doctors.
I do. It's some sort of myocardial something or other. But he's a clear bill of health and should contribute and help immensely. He makes up for the cat from Rhode Island.
Catalina?
Who, yeah.
Hey, yo, Tony.
That guy.
Tony Catalina's brother.
Wine mixer.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to be too bearish on this offensive line, and here's why. So, like, with the Rhodes staff, the strength of the staff was on the defensive side. Rhodes was a good defensive coach.
He was. He was a D-backs
Wally
guy.
Burnham was the star of that coaching staff. Ask me to name the best, individual position coach. It's Shane Burnham. Shane Burnham's the best. He's the strongest. When you look at these guys, they're all offensive line gurus.
They are.
That makes me feel a lot better. And that I think that will make up for, you know, I don't think it's going to make up for losing Daniel Burton. But that's I think these guys have worked with lines like this before, albeit at a much lower level. But that it, at least they know what they're getting into. And I think that they're going to be able to compensate some for that, much like the Rhodes staff did defensively in the first few years of their era.
And Iowa State didn't lose a couple first-round picks now.
Correct.
So they were good players, good solid players. But they have people, young guys, they're young, but they can grow in to be players that can contribute. I just don't know if it's this year. I hope so. I hope it is.
Campos is a nice player.
I like Campos. And I think Philpert had his moments last year. If he can get
Philpert jump off sides and stuff all
the
time.
Yeah, if he could just lock in all the time.
Come on, JP.
You got it, JP.
You got it, dude.
But skill-wise, they used to have the Dallas Cowboys triplets. I think this is Iowa State's best triplets since Sage. I think Warren, Lanning, Lazard are better trio than Meyer, Blythe, Stevie.
Now, okay, let's go to Joel Lanning. I love Joel Lanning. Like, I could sit in BS with Joel Lanning for hours. He's still, 1-5 as a starter? Now, I don't think that's fair. Like, I don't think it's fair to just throw that on Joel Lanning.
No, it's not. He had Oklahoma State 1.
Well, and I can make an argument that they should have won TCU, and there's some other ones out there. Or Kansas State.
He had Joel Lanning's fault? That's not Joel Lanning's fault.
So my...
Why'd you bring that game up?
Well,
I'd forgotten about that.
Listen, my whole deal is I want to be fair to Joel Lanning, and like I don't think it's fair to like say, oh, he's Sage.
No, I'm not calling him Sage. I'm saying they're three.
I understand that. Am I becoming like the? Be honest with me.
I will be.
Am I becoming like the pessimistic Iowa State guy?
Part of it is your job. You have to be.
Yeah.
But no, it's...
I love Joel Lanning. It's and like, been... As much as I want to anoint him, I kind of want to see some wins first.
Well, when's the last time Iowa State has had good quarterback play?
Brett Meyer?
Austin had couple moments.
Austin, but...
Wasn't consistent.
Austin would have been... If Bob McFarlane's system is there for 4 years, Austin has records.
Agreed.
But Austin got jerked around so much by coordinators and quarterback coaches where it made it damn near impossible.
And then you had, Jance Barnett, Richardson. Poor Rojas just kind of got thrown in there. He probably wasn't ready. So they have, you're right, they haven't had, there's no, from history, quarterback play has been it's been rough.
So that's where I love Joel Lanning. I think the kid's a winner. I think that he's a great leader. I think Joel Lanning is a sophomore is as good of a leader as I've seen since Arnott at that quarterback position.
And he's a junior now, upperclassman.
And
he should be a leader. In a, his numbers were okay. 10 touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
His completion percentage is less than desirable.
Yes, that's where I was going next. 56%. And Sam was at 60% last year, so he was worse than Richardson was.
Having said that, Joel also was playing in the brunt of the Mangino exit.
Right.
There
that was
a,
not an easy situation.
So that's my whole deal. Like, to me, this is how I'm approaching Joel Lanning this year. I should write a column about this. This is his rookie season. I don't care what he did last year. I have no, like, I'm going to clean slate with me, Joel Lanning.
Well, when you know you're the guy entering a year, it's a totally different mindset.
Dude,
than
the guy had an offensive coordinator get fired mid-year who taunted them after they lost a game on Twitter.
That needs another podcast.
So,
like,
seriously,
of all the things, because that K-State game, what did he tweet?
The fat lady singing, and the irony for Mark Mangino to
be—he had to know that, right?
To be tweeting about fat ladies.
What a horrible way that whole thing unraveled. Yeah, I'm glad that's gone.
Hey,
can I tell a story?
I'm gonna just yes. One
no,
second.
I maybe yeah.
Tell it.
Okay. Well, this was.
I think I know where we're going here.
It was after the K-State game.
Oh God!
No, it wasn't the K-State game. It was Mangino's last Baylor.
Oh yeah.
That was his last game.
Because he got stripped of play calling duties at halftime, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that.
That's what happened.
I don't know if that ever was. I don't.
Did we
don't
ever
know.
Confirm that?
I don't think it's been confirmed that. It's been speculated. I don't even know if that's true or not.
Okay, so but, hey, if you just heard that, like, that is not confirmed.
Could be. So I travel as part of the radio network with the team, and we get on the plane after the Baylor game, and it was.
Hadn't it been like flooding in Waco?
Yeah, it was
horrible.
And Iowa State played better in the second half. You know, there's some momentum there.
Played really well in the second half.
But get on the plane, and it's about, so what they do, they have an hour to cool off, and they'll take a charter bus to the plane and then go. So this is probably 2 hours after the game. And I get on the plane, and Mangino's got a plate full of a sandwich and Lay's potato chips, and it was just taking a nap.
It's inappropriate.
He's just taking a nap. So whatever the world was concerning, it wasn't to him at that time.
My Mangino story is I didn't do Cyclone Reaction after the Tech game because good friend of Cyclone Fanatic, big supporter Kim Pullen from Heartland Finishes, you know?
Right.
It was his wedding day, and I was involved in the wedding, and pre-wedding ceremonies was the game, right? And Adam Gray of Cyclone Fanatic and I went to Welch Ave Station.
Oh, I've been there.
To watch the game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we watched the first half there. And I'll just say we had a couple of pitchers. And so we watched the second half in the Jacobson Building in Heartland Hall, which is named after my friend Kim. And we're sitting there, like, at a table with a bunch of bigwigs from Iowa State watching this game. And, Brent, like, it had been a long time since I had just sat and watched the game as a fan, an Iowa State football game. I was infuriated with the play calling. Like, I don't like to be the play calling guy. Like, I've never been – I don't remember the last time I've been that upset with play calling.
Yeah.
It's been the Barney Cotton since – been the end of that 2000 – the second half of those games in 2005.
This was 31-0 after the first quarter, that Baylor game.
Well, yeah, it was. It was horrible.
Anyway,
I had too much to drink that night. No. I try not to drink and tweet. But I tweeted that night. It's like midnight, and I tweeted, like, Rhodes needs to fire Mangino. Like,
I remember this.
Because I went home and watched the replay.
And you were just even more upset.
And I came down in here into this very basement, and I was just pounding one Busch Light after another, and I was mad.
Because they were running it well, and then he would just throw
Warren,
it on.
Warren was averaging like 11
yeah,
yards a carry.
Yeah, it's coming back to me.
And
now.
Then like he's like, oh, we're going to throw a 2-yard out.
And it's pouring down rain.
Can't complete anyways against the worst rush defense other
than
ours.
They were
country.
Really bad.
I was so mad, and I just was down here, and I was like, screw it. And I consciously knew what I was doing, and I said, he's got to be fired after this. Like, there's nothing, like, there's no reason why this guy should ever call another play at Iowa State. And contrary to what some of you believe, I had no idea what was coming.
I don't. Nobody did. That was
that was a sh- Those Monday morning press conferences are so boring. Like, nothing ever happens. And, man, I will never – that was such a surreal moment. I'll never forget when Rhodes stood
and good for him.
And just fired him on Monday morning.
Because Paul knew
that
the odds of him being back were
– yeah, teetering.
Or teeter. That's a good word.
You've got a new president.
And you just come out months previous so that we should be winning – I don't remember what he said, but should be a bowl team or something like that. And you had
to that Board of Regents meeting. Yeah.
You had the Toledo game won. You lost it. And now your offensive coordinator is doing almost the exact opposite of what you want. And so he just said, if I'm going down, I'm going down with my guy. And good for him. It almost worked. Because if they had Oklahoma State beat, and then K-State should have been a win.
Jeez.
I don't know. I don't know if he's still back then, but
TCU was...
It's tied at half.
Yeah, like
Mangino was still there.
I don't know if they should have won TCU, but that should have been.
But this is what gives me optimism about this year. With all the circus that was in that coaching staff last year, they still almost won six games. They were really close to six wins. And now they've got continuity. They've lost a couple of players off that team. There's some talent there. I don't think this is a talentless team.
I do think that when Paul Rhodes stood up and said that this will be a bowl team next year, they had a better chance of being a bowl team at that point than they do right now with what they've lost.
True.
If you think about the offensive linemen and then DeVario Montgomery, Jawan Wesley.
Yeah.
People forget about those guys. Joshua Thomas.
Levi Peters.
Yeah, we've already talked. Luke Knott.
Yeah.
They've lost a lot.
It does add up.
Having said that, their recruiting class is probably three times as good as it was that day when Paul Rhodes stepped off the field for the final time. So you've got more guys coming.
They're on campus now.
Yes.
And not to mention the group coming next year, but they're next year.
Correct. And I would say this, and I truly mean this, that I think the Rhodes staff was finally, after five, six years, learning how to recruit here. And I think their best work was the final
class.
Two or three classes that they put together. So having said all of that, like, Campbell's got some talent that's like in that red shirt class right now. And I think that will kind of come to fruition as well.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
No, I do.
Am I being overly optimistic?
Just think about the red shirt freshmen that played last year and were really good.
Yeah.
I mean, Brian Peavy has a chance to be the best corner at Iowa State. I think he already is since Ellis Hobbs. I think he's a better cover corner than Leonard Johnson. I love Leonard. I think he's a better cover corner than Leonard Johnson. If Brian Peavy is 3 inches taller, he's a player that could leave early for the draft. He's that good. He was underappreciated last year, but he's a phenomenal corner. I think the secondary's has a chance to be extremely, extremely above average.
I got a tip the other day.
I like tips.
Mike Johnson. Keep an eye on that.
Redshirt freshman this year.
Dude, I'm writing about this teaser to one of my columns coming up about five impact redshirts coming up this year for the Cyclones.
He's one of them.
Mike Johnson, you know who he reminds? This is totally random, but I think you'll appreciate it. You know who he reminds me of? Wes Johnson. Here's why. Do you remember the first time you and I ever saw Wes Johnson?
Summer League.
And we're like, dude, like,
why is this guy at Iowa State?
This guy, like, I had no idea anything about him, but he looks the part.
Yep.
Like, he had zero offers, like, that. We don't understand it, but he looks like a stud. And when I first laid eyes on Mike Johnson, I remember turning to, it was one of the admin guys on the coaching staff. It was in spring football. I go, who the hell is that? And they told me, and I'm like, whoa. Now, Mike Johnson was he had some pretty good offers, but academically didn't cut it out of high school, so we had to use that gray shirt, redshirted last year, and here he is now.
And
it's his third year on campus. Keep an eye on Mike Johnson, guys.
Starting, what they
basically
call that, the strong safety?
He's a strong safety. Yeah. It's called RS. I got to get used to these new depth charts.
Yeah, well, I think this is smart, but it also is confusing. They actually list 12 starters, so you have the Sam, which is the traditional Sam strong side linebacker. You also have the star, which is your nickel. And you'll see both those depending on configurations. But it also allows two more guys to get on the depth chart, which is nice. And speaking of,
this DeAndre Payne
he's my guy.
That's your guy? That's a good guy to have.
So here's my theory on DeAndre Payne. Okay. Not just because he reminds me of DeAndre Kane, which is a nice little...
He always reminds me of Major Payne.
It's like one of the five movies you've ever seen.
A classic.
No, Payne played at Tennessee. So good player, really strong. You remember the 09 defense?
Yeah, I remember that.
They were horrible in 08.
09 was Nate Frayer led the way up front.
Sure. But do you remember who the one of the safeties was back there who completely changed the whole outlook of that defense?
He went on to play for the Barnstormers, did he not?
No, he was ended
Sims?
Up playing for the
yeah. Sims. Yeah.
Played for the Eagles.
I was thinking of Teron Benton.
Yeah, you're thinking Teron Benton. But yeah. David Sims David changed Sims. The complete outlook of that defense.
Dude, he was like he reminded me of Bob Sanders of Iowa.
Right.
Come up and hit you. I like him.
And Payne's maybe not quite that hard a hitter, but an impact guy who's going to come in and I think start and play a lot. Where Sims changed that whole secondary, the way he could come in, cover, hit guys, and upgraded the talent immensely up there, and everybody rallied around him. He ended up being the defensive newcomer of the year. From what you hear from the staff, they think Payne has that type of impact ability where maybe not newcomer of the year, but a player's going to start, he's going to be everywhere and play a lot.
Let's just play a little game real quick. Because the more we talk about the defense, the more I think it could potentially, if coached right, and some of those turnovers happen, be better than last year. Okay?
Yeah, and
they're better up front.
Stat-wise, they weren't horrible last year. Okay, they gave up 32 points per game, which you think, that's not very good. Texas Tech, who was horrible at defense, gave up 46. I mean, you're still talking about the Big 12. Giving up 30 is not awful.
It ain't intramurals, brother.
No. And so if they can get that number on like 30 or below, which is only 2-point difference, now we're talking.
Speaking of that, I went to Colorado. Went to Boulder.
Did you see old Danny Hawkins?
We were headed home. Well, my parents were taking us from Estes Park to the Denver airport. And I was like, well, we had all this time to kill. Let's run through Boulder. It's an interesting town.
It is an interesting town.
A lot of hippies in that town.
Yeah. Still a fun place to go. Not because of that.
I don't know
I think
how,
it's a fun scenery.
Can somebody explain to me how they're not better in football?
Right? You'd be able to recruit to that.
That town is amazing. Like, there's a lot of hippies, but it's an amazing town. I told my wife, I'm going to move to Colorado when I retire.
You'd be for Colorado rejoining the Big 12?
I said this on that podcast I did when I was out there, that I'm all about Colorado State now.
If no one's ever been to – I encourage people to go to Boulder. It's a fun – and it's not – I'm not just talking about the recreational usage there.
Talking about the marijuana?
Yeah, but it's
– smoking some J's, boy?
It's
– The Iowa Clinic Men's Center would not recommend
They would not that. Recommend that. Doc Nicholson says no. No. Not the Iowa Clinic.
If you take that into the urgent care, they're going to kick you out.
No, but it is different. And it was always a fun road trip because it's not, you know, the Midwest. It's I'd be for Colorado or Colorado State. I'm for them too, just to change the trip a little bit. I'm kind of souring on BYU.
Why?
They're a little uppity for me. I don't know. Their fans on Twitter.
BYU is the only candidate that actually brings something just, to the table.
They got an arrogance. They got an arrogance to them. Like, what?
That's because they're better than the rest of the candidates.
If they were so good, somebody would have picked them up by now. Settle down, BYU.
I heard that the private schools are fighting that. That TCU and Baylor.
Oh, I can see that.
Don't want BYU.
I can see that. There's a lot of there,
Baylor should have no say in anything that the Big 12 does. Baylor should literally just be hanging on by a thread right now and just be grateful they're still in the league.
It's like once they get over, they make a little progress, and they ended up. They've run out of feet to shoot.
Yeah.
Baylor.
Real quick, Big 12 expansion analysis. Based off of what I've heard, background noise, this is not reporting. This is Bloom and I sitting at my home office just BSing. Iowa State and the little schools in the league, basically everybody not named Texas and Oklahoma, or really Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, because those schools are just shills for their big brother.
That they have
That's
to be.
That's all they do.
Yep.
Which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other schools finally have some balls.
They're going after them?
They're finally standing up to
Good.
The big dogs. They're kind of like just... banding together from what I've heard, and they're saying, hey, You either sign the grant of rights or quit screwing up our league. Sign the grant of rights or we're going to keep playing hardball.
That's fine and dandy. Texas and Oklahoma still know they have the leverage there.
They do.
Because where are the other guys going to go? Like, they can't.
This is true, but I also think that I think many people are overplaying Texas's appetite to leave the Big 12.
Sure. That's absolutely a part of it.
I think that they still want to be in the Big 12. They like being the big dog. They like all of this.
They just want the...
And I also, I would make people be wary of Texas politics. Do you really think that Texas politics are going to want Texas to blow up the rest of the league that includes Baylor, TCU, Houston, arguably? Like, I think that there's a lot more political pressure on Texas to stay in the Big 12 than one might believe. But, well,
no,
we're going in a completely different direction.
Texas right now, they want to, they're like the gal that wants attention, and they're not getting the attention. They got to find a way to get attention. And if they just keep going along with the Big 12, then okay. But they're trying to say, oh, look how hot I am still. Look at me.
Well,
people
you put
want
on
me.
A few pounds, miss.
Yeah. Win a couple football games. And the Big 12 needs Texas. They really, same with Oklahoma.
No
but
question.
I don't think those schools, if they go to the SEC or the Big Ten or the Pac-12, they're not the big stuff anymore. They're another fish in the pond. So I agree. I think it's just posturing. I think hopefully it gets done because Iowa State is much better off with
they are
in the Big 12.
But I'd also argue that Iowa State basketball would be. Man, if you add like UConn and Cincy and BYU,
everybody looks at football. You forget about basketball. That'd be fun.
I mean, it's not going to harm Iowa State basketball, like they're. But it gets, damn, that's a hard league.
Yeah, it gets tough. That's fun though. Basketball is one thing. Football is another. Although I wonder how it changes scheduling. This is an interesting little factoid. In the Big 10 now with 14 teams, Ohio State will play TCU and Oklahoma more the next 4 years than they will play Iowa.
Wow.
That's how screwed up it is, though. They've got non-conference games with those two each, but they only play they'll play Iowa one time in 6 years. And you see why we make fun of Iowa's schedule when they have the easiest schedule of anybody ranked in the top 25.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, back to our little assignment here. And then we got to keep moving.
Yeah.
We're already almost to 45 minutes. Okay. This is what happens when we get – because we don't do podcasts together very often anymore. Some people go and get real jobs, and they move to the suburbs, and then all of a sudden they don't want to participate in the lowly website anymore. I'll make a case that the defensive line is better this year. You lose Dale Pearson.
Who had a phenomenal year.
He was fantastic. However, I mean, the rest of these guys, I think Justin Thomas can be a freak if he ever...
Is he going to figure it out, though?
Well...
I haven't heard anything from him at all.
I think it might be by design.
Okay.
I think last year it's all about hyping Justin
Thomas.
They did.
They hyped the heck out of him.
This year it might be like, hey, let's just wait and see what Justin brings to the table.
I keep forgetting he's still on the team.
Regardless, even if J.D. Wagner can be your first and second down guy and you bring Justin Thomas at 6'6", 275 off the edge on third down, I'm fine with that. Are you?
Right. The Leo position confuses me a little bit.
With Gabe Luna and Mitchell Myers?
Yeah.
Gabe Luna, hell, I mean, the fact that Mitch Myers is
both of those
no
guys,
starter
both
is...
Both those guys have phenomenal stories. Don't get me wrong.
No, I
like,
know.
Gabe Luna, like, broke his back. At one point, they didn't think he was going to play again. And then obviously, Mitchell is well documented.
You want my prediction? Your starters will be J.D. Wagner and Justin Thomas.
I think they move on the other side. And then you got the new kid, Stewart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about him.
He's going to be in the mix.
He'll start.
He'll at least play on third down.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Demond Tucker. He's a bona fide stud.
No doubt. Best nose guard they've had there in quite some time.
What a career Robbie Garcia's had. He started his first game as a redshirt freshman, and Rob Gray from Cyclone Fanatic can attest to this. I turned to Rob Gray when we first saw that depth chart, and I said, this team will not win a Big 12 game if that guy is their actual starter at defensive tackle. Because he was tiny.
Yeah.
But he's built himself better, up.
And, got a little better last year.
But he did get a sack in that game. Yep. That was the North Dakota State game. Yep.
And then he's only a junior.
Yeah. So I don't mind him as my backup D.
Not at all.
Nose guard. I'm okay with that.
And Pierre Acca is finally a senior. He's one of those guys that's been around for a while.
Yeah, he's really never done anything.
Hasn't done much. Maybe this is, if you're going to do it, obviously now's the time.
And Vernell Trent will split snaps.
And Trent's played some quality Big 12 snaps.
You know who we haven't talked about is that McEnroe Alexander either.
Another secondary guy.
Yeah, what a kind of an impact does he make? He's a stud.
Him and Edwards.
Yeah.
Both have played in Power 5 football. And they're... But the secondary doesn't need those guys. That's, I think, what is most encouraging.
Correct.
Is the secondary, Nigel Tribune's situation withstanding, if they get it figured out.
But he'll miss one game.
Obviously. But Wiltz, who had probably beaten Tribune out anyway, Peavy's a lockdown corner. You move Jay Jones from linebacker to corner, who's a nice piece to have there. Plus the safety guys, Cotton Moyle's only a junior. We already talked about Mike Johnson and DeMonte Ruth. They loved last year as a freshman. Now he's a sophomore. Could be an impact guy. So they've got how many
DeMonte
players
Ruth
back
is 5'9", 174.
Yeah, but he's fast. He played a little bit last year. Did okay.
Yeah, he did okay.
But they've got 10, 12 guys back there that can contribute.
Now let's talk about the weakness of the defense.
It's the linebackers.
That's linebackers.
Oh, and there's no doubt. This is why you play a 4-2-5 or whatever they're thinking.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's be honest. Kane Seeley has not looked good when he's been on the field.
No.
In the first 3 years of his
career.
He's
got that Jevon Miller syndrome going.
Yeah.
Wouldn't Jevon play a little better as a senior?
So, I'm just wondering what, maybe something. But those guys loved Kane Seeley in the spring.
Yeah.
They talked about him all the time.
Well, he's got Big 12 size.
Yeah, 6'2", 235.
Good quickness to him. Just has never been in the right place when he needed to be. Willie
Harvey was. He hasn't been fast enough to stop the guy.
Willie Harvey's an automatic starter the other spot.
I like Regan Northrup.
And I do too.
But he's only 205.
Yeah. If they just don't have a lot of depth there is the issue.
How is Regan Northrup?
I don't even know who any of those freshmen would they play the Tymar Sutton kid?
Yes.
He one that
he'll play.
Okay. He's the one I kind of targeted as a guy that can play.
There's my prediction. He'll play. He's got a lot of Jeremiah George in him.
I like that.
He'll
Sutton's
play.
From the Pittsburgh area.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't play. I guess I shouldn't be so sure of it, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
Because they don't have JUCOs there, do they? At linebacker? To my knowledge, I don't.
We should have had Stansberry on this with us.
No, I don't. I'm just going through. Not to my knowledge that they have any JUCOs there. So the
Do you have your JUCOs in front of you?
I've got the recruits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the JUCOs? Oh, another red shirt to watch on the other side of the ball. Hakeem Butler, FYI.
Like him.
Yeah.
Carson Green.
Carson Green, I'll tell you, has not, I don't think he was phenomenal in the spring, but that was his first spring on campus, and there's a huge learning curve from JUCO to this, so you'd rather him get that out of his system in the spring, so hopefully he has a better fall camp.
Another offensive lineman, Ogie Udiagu.
We don't know what we're getting there.
Cliff Fernandez is going to probably be the starter at tight end.
Did you watch the stuff from today?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but
Chandler's still the guy, but
Fernandez is a stud.
Fernandez has to be the player eventually.
I heard that Golish was talking about that. Jared was telling me that tight ends are going to get the ball more.
Well,
that's scary.
It's like, well, no, but they had 6 passes last year they caught. So it's like, if they don't get it more, then what happened?
I want to tell a quick tight end pass story. I was,
awful last year. They didn't even their first catch was in. It was after the Baylor game. Titans not catch a pass till game 7.
I was once at an event. This was one of the Psych 1 events that I was doing.
Yep.
And it was the after party deal with, and I was hanging out with Tom Herman was there.
Okay.
And so I went to the restroom, and I came back, and Herman was on my phone.
Oh, no.
I'd left my phone sitting there. my dad had called. And, you know, Herman answered it and was just kind of having fun with my dad. This is just Tom. Like, he's just crazy.
Tom,
like,
is a weirdo in a good way.
In a lovable way. Mm-hmm. And he had my dad on, like, speakerphone. You could hear, like, he and my dad, like, having this conversation.
Did your dad know?
Tom was like, yeah, this is Tom Herman.
And your dad had to love that.
My dad made his debut on the podcast.
I heard it. It was where you did well. He's going to replace the rest of us here.
And, like, they're having a very cordial conversation. All is good. And then my dad goes, you know what, though? Why the hell don't you guys throw it across the middle of the tight end more? Colin Franklin at the time. And at that point, Herman just picked up the phone and hit end. He hung up on him.
Fantastic. Yeah. That away, Big Mike.
Because that's so classic, because it's so my dad.
Because your dad's probably just having a good chat, and he's like, you know, I'm gonna do this.
Well, they were they were talking about like life, and then dad just can't help it. He's like, I've got the offensive coordinator on the phone. I've got to tell him my thoughts on his play calling. And then Herman, that's vintage Herman, because he's like, screw it, I'm not
entertaining this.
I am out. Not working right now. Oh, that was great.
Yeah, so that
six
position,
six
passes they caught last year.
Jeez.
Which was, I mean, they used DJ Bibbs a lot.
But he was Bibbs their is clearly best player.
A much different talent than Ben Bosin.
I don't know. I hope Cliff Fernandez can do it. He's 6'3", 255.
He only caught 18 balls in JUCO, but he was a converted quarterback. So, a little bit of learning curve there.
And this is the problem with, like, the receiver issue, the having to kick those guys off.
Right.
Because I think that they were wanting to use those big wide receivers a little bit in that, not necessarily to block, but in that type of a formation in the tight end position some.
Well, if you look at Toledo, the last
can't do that now.
3 or 4 years, they had two tight ends almost more often than not. So they love the tight ends in that system. I don't know with the current group. I believe Chase Allen will play.
Oh, I do too. He's kind of in the Tymar Sutton deal right now, where if he doesn't play, it's more of a surprise.
I would agree with that.
Does.
And he's the best pass catcher out of that bunch.
Do you, I asked for some Twitter questions earlier.
Get through them real quick.
Well, we didn't have great questions.
Step it up, y'all. Let's go.
I mean, we had a lot of questions, but I mean, as far as like really good
ones. Let's go.
Jeremy tweeted in. It's not even a question. He says, Jacob Park. Period.
He's like the,
jeez.
We're going to go with him.
Well, he's the classic backup quarterback.
But he's got that mystery intrigue.
Yeah, well, he's Steel Jantz. He's kind of like he's the new Steel Jantz.
Yep. I don't know. They show him a lot in the highlight videos.
Do you remember the day that
nothing.
Steel Jantz committed?
Yeah, I do.
Just the mystery and everybody just kind of...
He's still a mystery. Is Rob Gray going to find him?
We can't get a hold of him. Frankly, I'm starting to... There's no doubt in my mind.
Guy's like Tupac.
Steel Jantz is hard to track down. But I'm also starting to question Rob Gray's work ethic when it comes to tracking
him down.
It's like Rob.
No one's heard from Steel Jantz.
Are you actually an investigative journalist or not, Rob?
Doesn't want to be found. Can't find him.
Jacob Park, that would be my analysis on him. He's the classic backup quarterback.
Well, and Zeb Nolan, they should redshirt Zeb Nolan.
And I think that they will.
But Park, I haven't seen him. I don't know.
I don't know either.
The fact that he's a SEC guy that has that experience is exciting.
I've heard one story about Jacob Park, and it was his like first day in the facility. He picked up a football and slung it and hit Lazard on a laser down the field. Everybody was like, wow, guy's got a cannon. Does that mean he can pick up a playbook? I don't know.
Sounds like the show Friday Night Lights. Just going to step in. QB1.
See, and then Kyle tweets in, if Landing meets expectations, is he the only quarterback we see, or will the other two play in specific situations? If Landing meets expectations, he's the only quarterback who will play any meaningful snaps.
Yeah, Nolan should redshirt.
Here's a Hawk troll. Skip him.
Thanks for following.
Did
you know? Can I throw this in? because I love Iowa.
Yeah.
Two of their last three sellouts were Iowa State games.
They don't care about Iowa State, though.
No.
Why don't you tweet that right now?
I'll tweet it game week.
It's 10:15 on a Friday night.
I'll tweet it game week. Wait. They haven't.
Let's make that our headline. It's Cyclone Fanatic.
They haven't beaten Iowa State at home since 2010, which is awesome.
What was the number one song in America? You're good at those.
That would have been Katy Perry, California.
I liked it.
Yeah, it was that. Yeah, California Dreaming or whatever. Yeah, that was her era. That was Katy Perry was at her best. Now she's on paddleboard with Orlando Bloom.
How much of Elliot writes? How much of Warren's success last year was from an offensive line made of mostly juniors and seniors?
That's a fair question.
I don't know. I think Warren had a lot to do with
that. He's an extremely talented fella. He will get his yardage this year.
Do you worry about
I don't think he's going to do 5.9 a carry, but he's going to get his yardage.
Do you worry about durability, though?
Oh, yeah.
Because he's going to get the rock so much.
Well, and then backups. He had a little Tyler Brown last year. He's gone now. And he had a little Joshua Thomas, also gone.
Let me make a statement.
What do we know about Sheldon Crony? We don't. I mean, we don't know anything.
Mitch Harger will be the backup. He's going to be the backup over Crony. This is a statement that I don't make because, frankly, I don't really like walk-ons usually. Sorry, Jeff Woody, friend of the program. I kind of like this kid. I think Harger could be a decent – for what they're going to ask of him, I think he can do an okay job.
Yep. Just get your 5-6 carries a game. Maybe not even that. Yeah. Run hard.
I'm more into Mitchell Harger than I am most walk-ons.
I think he's a little better than a typical walk-on.
Next question. Do you see any realistic scenario in which Iowa State wins 7-plus games this year? Craig writes.
Realistic?
All right, let's just do the schedule real
quick.
And let's put percentages.
It's not realistic.
Okay, Northern Iowa, percentage of a win.
90?
Whoa. 90?
Huh.
I would go 70% chance of victory. I've seen Northern Iowa beat Iowa State too many times. Come on.
I'll stick with 90.
Get rid of the Kool-Aid. Put the glass down.
Look at the game they played last year. It wasn't even close. Well, it was close for a quarter and a half.
At Iowa, what, a 20% chance of victory?
The thing with Iowa is they don't ever blow anybody out.
No. Okay, 25%. They're going to be a two-touchdown
underdog.
They'll
still be 14 to 7, 15-point favorite. Yeah, so 25%.
So, I'm just saying, the odds.
I know.
Listen, I know Iowa State. Iowa doesn't – they play in the Big Ten West. I get it. I understand it. I have to talk about this every day.
25%. Let's go
with it. But that's what Vegas is going to tell us.
Yes.
At TCU,
I would still take Iowa State plus 17.
Oh, me too.
So
no question. Especially the way Iowa plays and the way Iowa State's going
to
play now.
Yeah, they're going to. Iowa State's going to run the ball this year. They're going to
try. Milk clock.
I don't know if it's going to work. They're going to try to.
At TCU, what, a 15, 10% chance? 10?
At highest.
Yeah, because it's got to be significantly lower than Iowa because I think we both think TCU is better than Iowa.
Correct.
Except Iowa has a better home field advantage than TCU does, though.
They do. They're just TCU's. Their quarterback, they got a question there. Everywhere else is pretty good.
San Jose State, 85% chance of victory.
Yeah.
Would be my.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, if you're going by the odds, you're 2-2. Baylor at home. Now, a lot of people are going to say, minus Art Briles, Iowa State has a chance to win this game. If Art Briles is the coach, Iowa State is a 10 to 15% chance you win being at home. Now, I'd say 30. 35.
They're a big question mark for me.
Baylor is?
We'll know by then.
Yeah.
Kind of where they're at.
Yeah,
that thing could unravel on those guys.
Yeah, it really could. So
They got.
But we're still going to say at this point Baylor is the favorite.
Oh, yeah. By 10, probably.
Yeah. So you're 2-3 at Oklahoma State. That's a loss. I mean, that's like TCU. 15% chance of victory.
Yeah. When they last won there in 2000.
Dude, that quarterback of theirs.
Well, Mason Rand, yeah. He's a player.
If Teddy Bridgewater didn't work out.
You think he's an NFL quality?
I think he could be an NFL guy.
Okay, I'll agree.
Could be. I need to see more of this year.
That'd be a TCU type. Yeah.
15% chance of victory. At Texas, 40% chance. No, not that high. 30.
They're another one. They're going to have a true freshman at their quarterback.
They're going to have a – I think Iowa's better than Texas.
Yeah. Right now, for sure.
I think Iowa's better than Texas. TCU and Oklahoma State are better than Texas, so I'll give them a 30% chance.
I think that's fair. And that, again, when that game rolls around, we'll have a better idea, depending on their off. They got a whole new system that they're trying to put together there.
Kansas State at home. Win.
Finally.
60% chance.
Beat the old man.
Yeah. Beat the vampire. Put him down.
Last year, should have had
Bring some garlic to Jack Trey. Oh, my God. We should do that. We should totally bring garlic sticks to Jack Trey Stadium to slay the vampire.
Need to
what, a 60% chance?
Yeah, at home?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oklahoma on a Thursday night.
They're loaded.
What, did Iowa State, 3-65 now against the Sooners all time?
No, they haven't defeated Oklahoma at home since 1962? Something like that?
3% chance at victory.
No, it's home and it's a Thursday night, though.
Doesn't matter.
Weird stuff.
They're not winning that game.
Wacky, wild stuff.
2% chance at victory.
I don't know. Baker Mayfield, maybe, gets Thursday.
You talk, the less chance. 1.5% chance of victory. It's not happening.
I'm not confident in that one, though.
At Kansas? What a 75% chance of victory?
Yeah. I don't know anything about them, though.
They're not going to be very good. Texas Tech at home.
They were dead last. Dead last in college football on defense last year.
I love their quarterback.
Oh, I think Mahomes is a great player.
I do, too.
Flip a coin.
I'm kind of in love with...
Flip a coin.
Mason and Patrick. Those are my guys.
Would you rather have them than Mayfield?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
If I was starting my own team.
Yeah, you'd take them over Baker Mayfield.
I don't know about...
There's some good quarterbacks.
I don't know about Mason.
Yeah.
But I would take Mahomes over Mayfield.
Okay.
I think Mason's more of a... If you have the right system.
He's a pocket guy.
If I know I can get the right guys around him, then I would take him. But just general college football player, Baker's probably better. But say if I knew if I'm Mike Gundy, I'd probably take Mason.
A better arm.
Dude, he
throws a deep ball.
Dude, that's a good looking kid. He's built.
And Iowa State had him beat. There's another one.
And West Virginia at home. Similar conversation to Texas Tech. So, okay, here's how you get to 7. I feel like a political commentator right now when you're trying to get to the 2-7. These are the games you have to win. Northern Iowa, San Jose State, Kansas, and Kansas State.
Need all 4.
You have to have all 4 of those.
Yep.
And then you win one of these, or you win 2 of these. At Iowa, which again, that's going to be tough, but we've seen crazier things happen in this rivalry.
Yep.
You have to win one of these. At Iowa, Baylor, Texas Tech, and West Virginia. So you got to split a couple games that you're an underdog in. And they will be underdogs, likely, against Texas Tech and West Virginia.
Probably.
Not significant underdogs, but I bet that they're an underdog.
7's hard to get. 6 is...
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was just trying to get to 6. I forgot that
you're
I was trying to get
7.
To 7.
So you got
to
win. Yeah, you got to win. You got to beat both Tech and West Virginia.
You got to have a lot go your way.
Yeah.
I'm just getting to the ones that I think people will really care about. Should we run the Wildcat, yay or nay? No. I don't think so. I mean,
Joe Lanning will run.
Yeah, you've got a running quarterback. Why would you? Yeah.
You don't need Mike Warren to run out of there.
Is it too big of a risk to let Alan Lazard return punts?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
My number one job for a punt returner.
Catch the damn ball.
Yeah. He can do that pretty good. But when you talk to him, I thought it was an interesting interview. down in Dallas.
Yeah.
He didn't sound real thrilled about.
He was like, he's scared to.
Yeah, didn't. But he did a great job last year. He did not drop a ball, to my knowledge. Trevor Ryan is a guy that I think could be good there, although I think he fumbled once last year. I don't know. I don't think you risk getting Alan Lazard hurt back there. Try Trevor Ryan. See what happens.
Question about McEnroe Alexander. We haven't heard much of him because he's got to get on campus.
He's on campus.
Did he make it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He just hasn't.
I've been out all week.
We don't know yet what his status is as far as being. I think he'll get in the mix somewhere.
And then there's a question about the end zone and improving recruiting. I mean, yeah, it's helped. I mean,
well, they're going to
I don't know what new we can bring to the conversation there.
Well, and they're going to change the Jacobson a little bit too, right? Make it more of a players lounge friendly area.
The football complex, they're doing that too.
Are they doing that? They're doing it to the complex, not the Jake. Okay, I misunderstood that conversation. But they're gonna make it a little more socially enjoyable for the fellas.
And that's what the basketball guys do out at the Sukup. They're always hanging out. There's a pool table down there.
Big screen.
Yeah, they play video games. And
well, Paul was all about the, you know, bring your hard hat.
Go to work.
Which worked for them to an extent.
I think this is a good place to stop. We're at we're well over an hour.
Part two.
Part two is coming up in a couple weeks. So you're going to Minnesota this week?
I am. Northern Minnesota.
Going to Hoiberg's cabin?
Farther north than that. Going to Big Fork.
That's
apparently,
the town?
Apparently no cell phone service.
Well, it's
not my choice. In-law's choice.
Basically where I've been for the last week.
Well, you were on a mountain. Yeah. And good things happen when you're on that mountain. You should have stayed on that mountain.
Yeah. Jeez, it's unreal, isn't it?
Every time you leave, something good happens.
That's great. Well, the bad
news
is...
Now you're back for a long time.
I'm not going anywhere until May.
Blame Williams.
I'm basically working every day from now until spring football ends. So the reverse curse will have to wait.
Does it make you a little sad when people want you to leave? Or are you in on the joke?
I would rather be on vacation every day and just be hanging out at the beach if you guys want to pay for it.
I think I know a couple guys who'd pay for that.
I'd like that.
But it's crazy, though. We're less than 30 days now.
Yeah.
Summer is over, and fall football is here.
Once media days come, Iowa State's is on Tuesday?
Yes.
Yeah. Once that happens, it's on.
I can't wait. I like this.
Dude, I was at the Hy-Vee today, and the Oktoberfest beers are already out.
Oh, man.
The pumpkin beers.
Lock and load. Here we go.
That means football's here.
Well, there is football now. This is great. There's football now every weekend until February.
Is the Hall of Fame game this weekend?
Yep.
I'll be damned.
Mm-hmm. Every weekend until February, there's football.
You and I kind of have a little unofficial tradition, but we watch the Friday night before the first Iowa State game, you and I will always get together and watch whatever game's on. We have Stanford, Kansas State this year, that Friday night.
Ooh, that's feisty. Where's that at?
That's at Stanford.
Not as feisty.
The preliminary line is like Stanford's like a 17-point favorite. But at least it's a game to watch.
That's watchable. Usually Baylor beat up on somebody.
Usually that game.
Yeah. Who do they have opening week? Do they play anybody that's non-conference?
They start playing non-conference games, I think, next year.
Because they beefed that up a little bit.
Yeah, Briles was starting to schedule a bunch of those like Pac-12 teams.
That first day's got some good football.
Oh, yeah. Opening week's awesome.
It's really good. Really good. Because now the schools are finally, we're getting to that point where they know they should play somebody.
That's the best opening week of our lifetime.
Well, Oklahoma, Houston.
Yeah.
And then was it LSU, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
In Green Bay? I think that's where that is.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a bunch of good ones. You want me to look it up real quick?
Yeah, let's do it. Please. Because we know Iowa State plays you and I, 7 o'clocker. But I'm trying to think what else during the day. you could have on your tailgate setup.
Hold on.
It's the best part. Get the tailgate out for the first time.
I was looking
at
Phil Steele, but I'm just going to go to ESPN.
We are closer, listening audience, to Iowa State's first game than we are to the July 4th holiday. If that doesn't get you jacked up, I don't know what does.
Okay. That Thursday night, let's see if we've got anything decent. No, it's pretty much all garbage. Friday night gets interesting with the Colorado State, Colorado. That's always a fun game to watch. Right. I always watch that game.
It's not bad.
Okay. This is opening week of college football. Missouri at West Virginia. I'm just naming games that I think may be somewhat
interested.
That is.
That's interesting.
UCLA at Texas A&M.
I like that one.
It's a nice game. LSU versus Wisconsin.
It's in Lambeau.
Yep. Georgia, North Carolina, neutral field. I like that. That's probably that Peach Bowl kickoff thing.
Chick-fil-A
that's in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get to the good ones here. Oh, USC, Alabama. That's in Jerry World.
I'm okay with that. Was that night one?
That is night
probably,
game.
Yeah, so we won't get to see any of that.
Nobody will see that game because it's going head-to-head with Northern Iowa, Iowa State, featuring Brent Bloom and Sage Rosenfeld.
That's right, Cyclones TV.
Yeah, so like nobody's
Lock
even going
to
watch the big game there.
Who needs – who's their head guy now? Fowler.
Yeah.
You don't need Fowler and Herbstreit. You got Rosenfels and Bloom.
I agree.
Let's be real.
I'd rather watch Rosenfels and Bloom. Clemson at Auburn. True road game for Clemson going to Auburn on the opening night of the season.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I make a recommendation for folks?
Yeah.
Like Netflix? Do people have Netflix? Last Chance U. It's a series about Eastern Mississippi JUCO football last year.
I saw that. I haven't seen it yet, but I saw it advertised.
Highly wrecked.
Really
from,
good.
From me. Their backup quarterback in the show, John Franklin III, is probably going to be Auburn starting quarterback this year.
Wow.
But he's their backup. They started some local kid who's got a sweet Southern draw.
Did you know that Jeremy Johnson was my Heisman pick last year?
Yeah, it went well.
Hey. Man's got to be able to admit when he's wrong.
You could have gone. Should have gone with Beathard.
No, JT Barrett's my guy this year. Okay, that's my high
pick. It's a good pick.
Take it to the bank. Okay, other interesting games.
That's a lot for week one.
Oh, there's more. You've got Arizona BYU.
Okay.
The nightcap. That's a good
game.
That's
fun.
And then on Sunday, you have Notre Dame at Texas.
That's right. They moved that.
And on Monday, you have Ole Miss, Florida State.
That's a great weekend because that's Labor Day.
Yeah. And frankly, I just kind of went through ESPN's like just mass schedule here while we were doing this. I probably missed a game or two.
But normally,
normally, there's like two games to pay attention, and the rest are just garbage.
It's, you know, big program against FCS or something. Good steal. That makes me even more pumped up. Let's do this.
Have fun in Minnesota.
I will. See you
guys,
in a couple weeks.
We have a lot coming up this week with Media Day tomorrow. That means Rob Gray's like summer off. It comes to a conclusion. Jared's been working his butt off, and Krogs is working into the mix as well. So I hope you're enjoying the new website. I sure am. And thanks for listening. Thanks to the Iowa Clinic, Iowa Clinic Men's Center. Urgent care. Hey, if you ever get scarlet fever,
take note.
They'll pump the fluid into your veins, and you're going to feel a lot better. For Brent Bloom, I'm Chris Williams. How's that for an endorsement? So long, guys.
Be well.